Well, good afternoon. All right. I listening in on the phone. Like to send out a greetings to those who are listening on the phone. At least earlier it was Atha Ellithorp, so we're glad to have you out there, Atha, and Eleanor Allen, and we need to pray for Mrs. Allen, of course, as mentioned, her whole family and the loss they have. The Fakuris are listening in. He wanted to be here today, and I know that, and she did too, but we need to keep him in our prayers. He's hoping to be here next Sabbath. And Barbara Nelson is listening in way down south. And Lois Thompson. So greetings to all of those listening in. And since we have a new pastor here, by the way, is Kevin Kennedy here today? He's not here today. Okay. That would have been special. I don't usually start by telling the title of my sermon. Let me find. I have something here special. But since we have a new pastor, the title of the sermon is The Perfect Pastor. Don't you think that's fitting? Huh? The Perfect Pastor. Boy, are we glad. Aren't you glad to get a new pastor? So you might have a chance here. Now, I mentioned this to, and you've heard me through the years mention Davy Crockett, right? Davy Crockett is supposed to be here tonight. He and Barbara came from Little Rock. They're old friends. I pastored over there 9 years, and they were wonderful servants. He is a member of Living Church of God, and he came here. The Living pastor's out of town, I think, going somewhere else. So Davy's giving the sermon over there in the Living Church of God. But then he'll come here for the party tonight. He has never spoken a negative word that I've ever heard of about United. He's always been positive. But he sent me a little outline about the perfect pastor. Now, some of you may have heard this before. The results of a computerized survey indicate that the perfect pastor preaches exactly 15 minutes. He condemns sin, but never upsets anyone. He works from 8 a.m. until midnight and is also the janitor. I'm partway there. I bring my little broom, help clean. He makes $50 per week, wears good clothes, buys good books, drives a good car, and gives about $50 a week to the poor. He is 28 years old. That leaves Mr. Petty out. And has preached for 30 years. He has a burning desire to work with teenagers and spends all his time with senior citizens. The perfect pastor smiles all the time, with a straight face, because he has a sense of humor that keeps him seriously dedicated to his work. He makes 15 calls daily on congregation families, shut-ins, and the hospitalized, and is always in his office when he's needed. If your pastor does not measure up, simply send this letter to 6 other churches that are tired of their pastor too. Then bundle up your pastor and send him to the church at the top of the list. In 1 week, you will receive 1,643 pastors, and one of them will be perfect. Don't break the chain. Or you may get your old pastor back. Now, on a little more serious note, and we do have some scriptures we'll cover. If we had a discussion, which would be really interesting, wouldn't it? On what you would like a pastor to be like and to do and to excel in. What would you say? Well, Rebecca Bean Baker was here last week. She wanted to come this week, but she was brought those three young people that did special music last week for us. And so she came last week, and she and Brent gave me a little plaque as a gift for me and Lucretia. It's titled, The Heart of a Shepherd. Boy, now, she couldn't have given this to me because this is what I've been, but anyway. The heart of a shepherd always loves, always, always helps, always comforts, always befriends, always cares, always provides, always protects, always leads, always teaches, always encourages. Isn't that nice? That's sweet. Of course, she left here before she was old enough to really discern what I was really like. She had, you know, kind of an optimistic outlook as a little girl. So that wasn't that a nice gift that she and Brent gave to me? And I want to talk about the perfect pastor. And what would, and I've been here 29 years. And what would I like to be said about me? Or what would you like in a perfect pastor? What would I like? Well, here's some possibilities. He was so kind, caring, loving. He knew everyone and was totally dependable. He was my friend. Now, wouldn't you like that said about you, Gary? I mean, he was always dependable. He was my friend. He was so kind, caring, and loving. But think about this. There are ministers in the world who do a better job at that than I do. You know, I could be kind, caring, loving, dependable, and your friend, and not one person here could end up in the kingdom of God. There are a lot, minister across the street, they might say he's that way. He may be a lot more dependable than me, a lot friendlier, have a better memory, know everybody better. And I could be that way and not a soul would be in the kingdom. So that doesn't make, that's nice, that's good, but it doesn't make the perfect pastor. Or he was so balanced. He made the church balanced. He was so organized, a real manager. He had management skills. And still nobody could end up in the kingdom of God. So that those are good things to have. Doesn't necessarily make the, you know, and these are things you want to have. I mean, you want the minister wants to be close to everybody. By the way, a few years ago, not the present administration. So I'll say that. You know, they have these little local mini conferences for the ministers in certain areas. We usually meet either in Atlanta or we have met down at Birmingham in years past. But they have the little mini conferences. And the conference was basically about helping the pastor to be close to the members. To learn how to relate to them and get them to relate to him and back and forth and back and forth. And that's all good. But during the conference, while we were talking, I said, you know, if we do that and they're all close to us, they could all still end up in the lake of fire. Doesn't put them in the kingdom to be close to the pastor. But that's what the purpose of the conference was. As I say, it wasn't the present administration. I'm not knocking the previous administration. I'm just saying that's good, and it's good that they were doing it. But I've raised my hand and said, if all the members are close to us, it doesn't get them in the kingdom. I said, my job, when I finish, is to have tried to get everybody closer to God and to Jesus Christ. And I could go down this list. He strengthened families. He gave me the strength to carry on. He got our budget straightened out. Let me just tell you, I have written down here, he was a legal expert and kept us out of legal trouble. Back in Worldwide, I don't know why, I was asked so often about legal matters that after a while I bought a book on how to find a good attorney. And when some people would come up and would ask me legal matters, I would loan them the book. I don't have the book anymore. Obviously, it didn't get returned one time. I hope it helped the person I loaned it to. I have another one here. He got everyone a wood stove and firewood. And you'd say, what has that got to do with, you know, anything? I bring that out because in Worldwide, in 74, there were a number of ministers who left the church. And I was asked to go up to Springfield, Massachusetts, where I had been the previous pastor. And then we had moved. I was at the Boston area, and we started Springfield. And the minister who moved in to Springfield was one of those who left. And so I went to Richmond, Virginia first, where I had been a pastor, and then up to Springfield. And the members were telling me what the previous pastor did. He said, basically, remember we had the oil, gasoline crisis, oil crisis back then? He had gone around getting everybody wood stoves, and he held, you know, work parties to chop wood. And I said, well, what all did he do, teach spiritually? Oh, he just got us all wood stoves. That was basically it, that the world's going to go down the tubes. You need to have self-reliance. You need to have a wood stove. You need to have that. So you can do that. He's an auto expert. He knew how to handle problems with my house. And we will get some scriptures. I want to mention that when I came here, one of the things I had a great deal of difficulty with was getting the majority to look to Jesus Christ. And I think some of you who are older, now some of you have never had, you don't know any other pastor. But, and he was a nice man and dedicated. I'm not knocking him, but everything had to go through him. As an example, members could not call Bill Vernich to be anointed. They had to call that pastor, and if he wanted to call Bill, is this the correct? Isn't this what you told me? Yes. He's nodding his head, yes. See, you had to go through him. And people would ask me everything. And I've mentioned this example. We had to meet in a school rather than the war memorial, and they had had a measles outbreak in that school. So one Sabbath we were going there, and people brought out and said, well, we need to take Lysol, clean all the door handles. So a deacon called me and said, Mr. Keller, should I buy one bottle or two bottles of Lysol? And I said, well, I don't think that's really a spiritual question. I think you should ask a deacon. Now, of course, he was a deacon, and he knew I was being facetious. Hope he knew I was being facetious. And I was asked to go to SEP and teach for 3 weeks. I think it was the time I went to Orr twice and I went to Big Sandy twice. I think it was one of the times I went to Big Sandy after I'd gotten here. And lady came up and said, Mr. Kellers, what if we have a serious problem while you're gone? What are we going to do? She was really worried. And I answered, oh, that is serious. I guess you'll just have to rely on Jesus. Now, the word pastor comes from the Latin through the French. And anybody know what the word pastor means? I thought I heard a voice. Oh, no, that's there. It doesn't mean overseer. There is another word. The word bishop, that is often said bishop, comes from the Greek word that means overseer. The word pastor, both in the Greek, and the actual word pastor, which is not, of course, in the Greek. But the word pastor, you remember pastoral? See, means what? A pasture. The word pastor meant shepherd. Like pasture, pastoral. I would joke with JR on the radio that I may not look like a pastor, but I sometimes people tell me I smell like a pasture. So it means a shepherd. And so the important thing is to try to look. We all have a perfect pastor, don't we? We all have. You can be close to a human being, but a human being will always fail you. Fred Kellers will always fail you. Gary Petty is not going to be perfect, the perfect pastor. And he'd be the first one to tell you that. Or no, he wouldn't be the first one. He'd be the second one to tell you. Kim would be the first one to tell you. So, let's turn to Acts chapter 6 and read verses 1 through 4. Acts chapter 6. If I have helped anyone to be closer to God, then I have fulfilled my job. If I, as a shepherd, have helped you to see that you need to be at the chief, close to the chief shepherd. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention. When I was back in War Memorial Auditorium, Bill Vernich and I were standing up near the front, and a member, not with us, came up to us, and he said, we sold our house. Where should we move? Well, Bill Vernich answered before I did, and he gave the perfect answer. He said, Brentwood. And the man said, he looked stunned. And he said, I can't afford to move to Brentwood. And that's when I offered my suggestion. Well, if you aren't going to listen to the elders, I don't think you should even ask. And then we told him, look, we're joking. We're just kidding with you. We don't care where you move. That's your decision. Acts chapter 6. And we'll read verses 1 through 4. Now in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a murmuring against the Hebrews by the Hellenists. Now, that's not very clear, but it's the word Hebrew we think of as the Hebrew language of old. Actually, it was used mostly, that term was used mostly for Aramaic in the Bible. And some many times when it said he spoke in the Hebrew, it's actually his Aramaic. A little difference. By the Hellenist. Helen was supposed to be the mother of the... Tom? Was Helen the mother of? The Greeks. The Greeks. The Greeks taught that she was their mother. That the Greek, all the Greeks came from Helen. So they were called Hellenist. Now, it doesn't mean in this case that these are Greeks by descent, because Hellenist also referred to those who spoke Greek. So there was a murmuring from those who spoke Greek and didn't know Aramaic against those who spoke Aramaic. And they could have some been Gentiles, and some of them could have been Jews who frankly just didn't know how to speak Aramaic, because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, "It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation." Now, they didn't lose control. They gave qualifications. They said, "Here's what you want." Now, if they'd showed up with men who didn't have good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, and then it says, whom we, not having them, they weren't losing control here, whom we may appoint over this business. But they did allow them to get together and choose. "But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word." And you know, that's not a small thing. That's not a small responsibility. That's an important responsibility for a shepherd, is to pray for the flock, to pray to God the Father and to the chief shepherd, to pray for people. That is a very important thing. And so, I will say, members do ask the pastor to pray for them. Call, and that's something important that you should. You should feel free to call on any elder or each other or your new pastor and say, "I want you to pray for me." And you know, that's his responsibility. That's an obligation that God lays on him, to take that time, to spend time in prayer, to pray for you. And that brings up a thought. People have asked me what we are going to do in retirement. And I've been retired for a week and a half, and I feel like I've had one actual free day. But I will facetiously say to people, when they say, "What are you going to do?" I say, I'm practicing saying, "Would you like to supersize that?" Or, "Welcome to Walmart." Or, "Spend my time checking up on which dog foods don't have horse meat and pork, so when we need something to eat." Say, it's okay for the dogs to eat the horse meat, but not us. It goes along with the beans and rice. It goes very nicely. Throw in a little meat dog food. Hopefully chicken and beef. Now, those are the facetious answers that I've given. But I've told many of you who've asked me, "I want to do some drawing." How many of you have heard me say, "I want to do some drawing"? Just a few. Okay. You'd say, "Really? Drawing? A guy who has no artistic ability at all?" Well, there are 3 things I want to draw. Number 1, I want to draw closer to God. You know, in order to do that, it takes time. I want to spend more time. I mean, it is difficult. I mean, even I've been retired a week and a half, and I've had one day I really feel that I was able to spend more time drawing close to God. So I know I'm going to be able to do it. It's just going to take some time to where I can put other things aside and say, look, these things are not as important. I want to spend time. You know, I won't have as much paperwork. And the phone may not ring as much. But I want to spend more time in prayer and study and praying for God's people. I think that's a very important thing for me to do in retirement, is to have a little more time to pray for God's people. And there have been just a few times. I mean, I've got a long prayer list. The only way I can keep up with it is to, I keep it on my computer and print it out and change and mark and, you know, all these prayer requests that come out. And then you get every July and January this big list, 10, 12 pages of members. And Lucretia and I, we each have our own list and we go through it. It's kind of hard to get very far, isn't it, in one day or in prayer. And after a while, you know, when you're in your 70s, yes, you do, everybody in your 70s, you know this, it's hard to kneel for very long. Somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes, your legs start cramping. And you have to get in your chair and pray instead of kneeling. And maybe for some of you in your 60s, even you have that. But still, to take the time to pray for people and to beseech God. God does listen, but he expects us to ask. You have not because you ask not. So I do want to spend more time. I want to draw closer to God. The second thing I want to do is draw closer to Lucretia. I want to spend more time with her. And I'll just guarantee you that, and all members have said this, the church has always told the ministers, your first responsibility is to be close to God. Your second responsibility is your family. You know, it never works out that way. I don't know. Maybe Gary will say that he has put his family before the church. But it's awfully difficult because the family may be more important. But somebody in the hospital is urgent, is imperative, right? I mean, if I have a date with my wife and we're going to do something and go to lunch and I get a call and somebody says they're down at the hospital or please come anoint me, we cancel our date with my wife. And I go, and I'll still do that. So it's very difficult to be able to put your wife, your family next. And I want to try to do that in retirement though. I want to put Lucretia. I want to draw closer to Lucretia. And third, I want to draw closer to peace. To try, my body will not take stress the way it used to. I mean, I cannot fool my body. I can't even convince myself that I can put everything in God's hands, go to bed and sleep. I mean, there was a time when I thrived, I think, on stress. Having a busy schedule and could go home and sleep. But I can't do that anymore. So I need to draw closer to peace. But those are the three things I really want to draw closer to. But what can a minister do? I want to go back to that again. He can study God's word. He can prepare sermons. He can pray for you. And he can point you to the only perfect pastor, Jesus Christ. Now, if I have been able to get you to pray more or to study and to be closer to God, then I fulfilled my pastorate. And if I didn't, I failed. It's always been a pleasure. When I go to the feast and I'll meet somebody, I went up to New England. I was pastor up there for 4 years. And we went up to Pennsylvania. And there were people from New England who came up and said, Mr. Kellers, you baptized me. I mean, I didn't recognize them, been so many years. And then they would tell me, and finally I'd begin to recognize them. And I would take them by the shoulders and I would say, thank you for coming up. I didn't build all wood, hay, and stubble. There's a little bit of gold and silver and precious stones. So that was a real joy. So if I've been able to do that, then that's to get you closer to God. Then I was successful, despite all my personal failures, despite them. And it's a major part of any elder's job, including mine still. John Paul, Gary Petty, any other, is to pray for you. You can feel free to call in the middle of the night. Now, there was a time when I would get up in the middle of the night and go anoint people. And did it many times back in Little Rock. With one lady every month, she'd be in terrible pain. She lived about an hour away. Her husband would call. She was crying. She was in such pain. And I'd get up and I'd drive down in the middle of the night. I would anoint her and she'd be better and I'd drive home. But let me tell you, I don't think that's the wise thing for me to do. To get up in the middle of the night. I'll get up and get on my knees and pray for you. You can call in the middle of the night. You can call Gary Petty in the middle of the night if you're in pain. And we'll pray for you. Now, he may feel he's young enough to drive down to the hospital and meet you. You know, go to the emergency room. You know, do I keep saying you know? I think you do know. In the Bible, many times when God called a man to service, he did it at age 30. David became king at 30. Even Saul became king at 30. Joseph was taken out of prison and went into leadership, it says, at age 30. Jesus began his ministry at about age 30. It appears that most of the apostles would have been about his age. Think of that. At about age 30. You know, they talk about old King Solomon, and he died at age 70. He didn't get to be very old, did he? I think he was 30 when he became king also. And did I mention Ezekiel began preaching? Well, I want you to know, and one thing that really made me so happy was when I was told, and I couldn't have been more thrilled to find out they were sending Gary Petty. I mean, if they had sent somebody even in his 40s, I told Lucretia before I knew who was coming, we may need to just get out of town to give this guy a chance. Because people would look, oh, 40s. Why, he's just a child. So when I heard they were sending Gary Petty, not only a minister who was not in his 30s or 40s, but one well known to you, whose sermons people listen to on the internet all the time. And I thought, that's great. Now that's the good news. The bad news is they sent you a new pastor with a short shelf life. Less than a year, he's going to be 60. He's already old. No, he's not as old as me, because I'm very old. But it's going to be early next year he turns 60. Now I asked him, and he said, is that when I'm old? And I said, yes. And when you're 70, your warranty runs out. So it won't be long. I mean, when I showed up here, I was 46. 46 years old. So I'm thrilled to have him because I feel like I don't just have to get out of town to give him a chance. He's a known quantity. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 3. My purpose in this sermon, well, there are many purposes, but one of the major purposes is to encourage you to look past any human being to the perfect pastor, Jesus Christ. I gave a sermon not too long ago. You remember we did a series. I did a series of Bible studies in the book of Romans. And in the Bible study in the book of Romans, we got to Romans 14. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to cover Romans 14 in 30 minutes. So I gave a sermon on Romans 14. But I gave it a title. And the title was, Cut Your Brothers and Sisters a Little Slack. And one of the purposes is, cut your pastor a little slack. Don't expect him to be the perfect pastor. But in 1 Peter chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, the elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by constraint. Now there's the word overseer, which in the King James is translated bishop. But it actually, the Greek word here actually means overseer. Episcopos. Epi, you get episcopal from it. Epi means over, scopos means look. So it actually, that's what it means. As overseers, not by constraint, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. Now I want to read verse 4. And when the chief shepherd appears, the chief shepherd is the only perfect shepherd. The rest of us are just there to direct us all to the chief shepherd. And I want to turn to Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 10. This is my Bible. They have printed in here, need for maturity. And that is to where we each individually grow. And we are looking not just to the elementary principles of Christ. Therefore, leaving the discussion of the elementary principles of Christ, notice who the principles are of? Christ. Let us go on to perfection, not laying again the foundation of repentance from dead works and of faith toward God. And so he's saying we need to all be growing. We need to all be going further than just the elementary principles that we had. So I'm not encouraging you to ignore or discard the ministry, but to have you look past the ministry to God and to be close to God. And I really appreciated, boy, I thought, wow, this sermonette, is he going to use some of the verses? But he didn't. But I thought, how true, where you're looking to God. You're not looking to men. We trust God to guide men, But we know because he's doing it through men that the men will sometimes fail. And to cut them a little slack. Just like children have to cut their parents a little slack. They don't, but they should. I want to turn to the Psalms also and read some of them. And encourage you to look to God, to be close to God in prayer and study. Psalm 37, verse 39 and 40. Psalm 37. Verses 39 and 40. By the way, in saying that, I want to do some thank yous while we're getting this. I want to thank, there's so many, but you know, and I have thanked these people before. I want to thank everybody who has volunteered to clean this hall and close up. And they're on each a month at a time. And I try to help them because it's a difficult job. And I have my little broom and little dustbin and go around and try to help. I'm not here all the time, so it's kind of hard for me to volunteer to take a month. And but I try to help when I'm here. But you know, that's a great job. I mean, there's a lot of work to that. That's a commitment to be here. Last week, and by the way, I mentioned Mr. Petty's getting old. Give you an example. Last week I was downstairs and I was going around with my little broom and dustbin on a stick. And I should have gone sooner, but she said, you need to go up and rescue Gary. Because Gary had confided to her that he was tired. Now see, he had gone, was it this last, it was the week before. When was it you went was it this week or the week before that you went to, the previous week? He had gone to Cincinnati Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, gotten in late Thursday, I guess, driven back. Part of moving him here was they wouldn't have to pay the airplane flight for him. He could drive back, get in late. He got in late even when he took the plane. So he gets back Thursday late and he gives two sermons. And trying to get to know everybody, so people are talking to him over in Murfreesboro, and they should, he wants to talk to them. And people are talking to him here, but he told Lucretia, I'm tired. So she said, go up and rescue him. So I came up and turned off the lights. And somebody says, is this the hint? Yes, get out. I'm not pastor anymore, but I can be tough. I want to thank those who do that cleaning, and I want to thank those who clean the bathrooms, who volunteer to do the bathrooms. I might be able to get back in on that one, although if I'm going to be down sweeping, it's kind of hard to clean the bathrooms afterward. But I appreciate, those are the rough jobs. Now, there are so many who do things, but you know, those are the two jobs that are really not... I appreciate the guys who give sermons. But I don't have to especially thank them. They get up here and people come up and say that was a wonderful sermon. Or they get up and say that was an awful sermon. And I've always told you, if you got a problem with a sermon, go to him. Don't come to me. Go to him. You know, if you come to me and say, well, I disagree with what so-and-so said. Have you talked to him? Have you gone to him? And if you have a problem with my sermon, please come to me. And then if you come to me and we disagree and you think it's important, I always said what? Call Ken Martin. He's the reasonable pastor. Go ahead and call him if you think it's important. Same is true now. But I want to thank those who have done. And another thing I want to thank are those who call me and say, Mr. Kellers, are you eating lunch? Or is this your supper time? Now, it used to be we didn't have answering machines. And I have gotten as many as 3 calls during supper. And no one asked, are you having supper? So my family's sitting there and the phone rings and I don't know who it is and I don't have caller ID. So I go answer and I'm on the phone and I put it down and I go sit down and the phone rings again. And I get up and answer the phone and I'm talking to them and then I hang up. I've never complained about this to you because really I've had an answering machine here anyway. But then I'd get up the third call. And as I'm getting up to go to the phone for the third call, Lucretia would say, remember, honey, they don't know they're the third call. Because she's expecting me to say, what do you want? But some people do call and say, are you eating supper? Thank you. Some call and say, are you busy right now? And some say, I better let you go and actually hang up. After telling me that one time. So, since I'm no longer pastor, I can tell you these things. See? So I encourage you that if you're talking to Mr. Petty and you say, I better let you go, that you hang up. So, and another thing is the pastor is not, see if I can find it, a mind reader. Check my time here. There's no time limit. Yeah, there is for me. Some people, when it's interesting, and I'll tell you, Bill Cowan and his wife Betty, and we went to see them, and they're very different in the response that they have toward, you know, having people call them. And they said this, and they don't mind me telling you this, but he said when he is sick, he likes people to call. But when they're having problems or he's sick, she doesn't want anybody to call her. She doesn't want people to call her and say, how's your husband? How are you? I hear you're sick. Some people, when they are sick, just want to be left alone. I happen to be that way. When I'm sick, I will go off to the garage or somewhere else, and I just want to be left alone. I don't want people to call. I don't want anybody to call and say, how are you? I want to be left alone. Now, some people want to be called. When my mother died, my father died, I just didn't need everybody to call me. Just leave me alone. Here is something I took out of the paper years ago, and it's the Atlanta paper. How many of you remember Andrew Young? Okay, a few of you. He was ambassador. He was the mayor of Atlanta, the first black mayor of Atlanta. He also was our ambassador to the UN, I believe under Kennedy. Am I right? When was he? He was also with the civil rights movement. He was one of the marchers with them. But anyway, Andrew Young, 2 months after the death of his wife, of 40 years, Andrew Young says he still feels her spiritual presence. But Jean prepared us for her death. And then it says this at the end. In the last 8 weeks, so many people have approached him to express condolences. Wouldn't you think, isn't that sweet? Heard the thing about nobody calls and somebody else says, boy, people call me. And if somebody says, well, nobody called me. Well, how many people do you call? You know, my thought. But anyway, in the last 8 weeks, so many people have approached him to express condolences about his wife's death that he has promised never to do the same to others. Young, 62, said in the interview with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, it is, he said, just a constant reminder of your pain. Now, the reason I read that is, Andrew Young, I'm like you. I want to be left alone. But there are some of you who don't want to be left alone. And the point I'm going to make is, if you want to be visited, if you want a visit from Mr. Petty, tell him. Don't let him guess. Don't let him try to discern. There was someone who, there was a death in the family, always seemed like a very private person. And I thought, this person does not want to be bothered. And then I got a note, why haven't you called her? And I went over and called her. But she seemed, I wasn't sure. I was thinking, this is a private person. She's not going to want to be called. And I was wrong. I misjudged. So if you want to visit, if you want to talk, you want to say something, or if you don't, you can always let him know. You can say, I don't want to visit. Or you can say, I want to visit. That way he doesn't have to be a mind reader. Or maybe he is a mind reader, but I doubt it. We were going to read Psalm 37, verse 39 and 40. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. Gary Petty, Bill Vernich, Lou Ficori, who is an elder, and I've only heard good things about his service that he did, but his health is not up to it right now. John Paul, we all want to help and serve, but look, your salvation is from the Lord. And that's where you're going to get your help. He is their strength in time of trouble. If we can help, we want to help. I'm still an elder. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord, and He is your strength and my strength. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in Him. You know, we've had two really excellent sermons that Gary Petty has given. Boy, I really appreciated them. The first one was on spiritual discernment and to see the difference. How can you discern between truth and error, good and bad, wisdom and foolishness? And, he gave 3 points in doing that. To examine, to test, and exercise, to actually do it. To examine something, test it. And he talked about going to the Bible. And so he was pointing us. Boy, I really appreciate being able to just sit down and listen to other people's sermons. I mean, we've had some excellent sermons here that I've been able to listen to and appreciate it and learned a great deal. And am thankful for the ones that we have gotten. I appreciated the vanity, what was it, the vanity experiment that, did I get the title exactly right there? That Dave Horvath gave. I thought that was just fascinating, the points that he brought out there. And the one that Russ Shelton gave on keeping your word. So I haven't heard all of them. But Mr. Petty said, not only the life of Jesus Christ, but the entire Bible reveals the criteria for examination to discern between truth and error, good and bad, wisdom and foolishness. So he's pointing us where Mr. Petty should be pointing us, to God. And I appreciated that. And then he gave one on faith. And the part I appreciated on faith is that faith isn't always where you get your answer the way you want, when you want. Faith is when you don't get the answer when you want, the way you want. And you stay faithful. And look, even Jesus was told no by God the Father. Now that showed his faith. His faith was not, just when he walked on water. Don't you think that was faith when he walked on water and did all those miracles? How about when Jesus said, "Nevertheless, not my will, but thine." Now that, to me, when he said, "Yes, I will be beaten. I will receive stripes. I will have nails put in my hands and feet. And I will be hung up on a stake." Now that was faith. And that's the point that I appreciated in that sermon on faith. That you trust God. So we've had two excellent sermons. I'll get up and tell you when they aren't excellent too, also. No, I won't do that. Let's turn, getting my notes all covered up here. Turn to Psalm 46. It says he'll deliver them because they trust in him. Not when you want, necessarily. We read verse 40. Psalm 46, verses 1 through 5. God is our refuge and our strength. He is the perfect pastor. He'll never fail us. He may postpone what we want. It may not come when we want, in the way we want, but it will always be what we need. And I appreciated Mr. Petty commenting to even thank God for the trial. You know, you got cancer, you can thank God for the trial. I don't remember his examples, but I remember him talking about, you got a trial, it's for our good. You can thank God, even for the trial. God is our refuge and strength. This is, we have a psalm, one of our hymns. A very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling. There is a river whose streams shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her just at the break of dawn. The nations raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. Well, I went past where I said. But the point is, God is the one. God is the one who is our very present help in trouble. And he can help us. We actually can be healed without a human being showing up. I mean, people who have called and you can't get the minister, you don't get him, fine, you tried. God saw that effort. He doesn't need my hands. He doesn't need the olive oil I carry in my pocket. God is the one who can deliver you. We should call for the elders because he says to do that. And we do want others to pray for you. That's good. That helps all of us. Psalm 60. Verse 11 and 12. Psalm 60, verse 11 and 12. Give us help from trouble, for vain is the help of man. Human beings, no matter how faithful, how humble, how desirous to serve, are human beings. Vain is the help of man. Through God we will do valiantly. For it is he who shall tread down our enemies. And my last thank you is to all of this congregation that has been so loving and so patient with me. It was easy to be patient with Lucretia, but thank you for being patient with me.